compromise is the way things get done. It's the lubrication of democracy. Compromise is the way things get done. It's the lubrication of democracy, where two people who disagree decide to come together and reach consensus for the good of the country.
That's former North Dakota Senator Byron Dorgan talking about compromise. Congress returns today, speaking of compromise, to try to pass a short-term funding measure to avert a government shutdown. The deadline is Friday. House Republicans decided to cut a loan guarantee program for developing electric cars and use those savings to help pay for $3.65 billion for disaster relief assistance for FEMA. Traditionally, Congress has never taken money out of other programs to pay for disaster relief. Democrats want to pass a bill to fund FEMA without any offsetting cuts. Who do you think is right, and what do you think about the threat of another government shutdown? And if you think that making cuts other places to fund the FEMA disaster relief assistance, do you agree that the way to do it was to take money from the loan guarantee program for developing electric cars and use those savings? Give us a call. It's an open forum today. What do you want to talk about? I want to talk about what they're talking about at the federal level right now. And I also want to talk about the Republican debates. What did you think about those? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. There's lots of other things to talk about. So what do you want to talk about? The House Republicans want to cut a program for developing electric cars, a new energy program, and use those savings to help pay for disaster relief assistance. I think much of it for the East Coast. What do you think about that? 614-292-8513. There have been a couple big fat stories in the Columbus Dispatch about the fracking that is expected to take place, and the drilling rights to the oil and gas in Ohio's Utica and Marcellus shale regions. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, if you want to talk about that. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher, and we have an open forum. And if you don't call, I'll just keep talking. So don't assume someone else is calling, because right now nobody is. And that can be kind of scary. 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go online. You can go to the on our website at wosu.org/allsides and make a post, a comment there. You can go on Facebook, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. You can tweet at Ann Fisher, WOSU. There are many, many ways to make it through to All Sides with Ann Fisher today. 614-292-8513 is the most direct, but we welcome anything else. Let's listen to some more news in the making. There's just so much going on now. It seems like there's always a lot going on, and it's tough to get to all of it the way we'd like, and it's always fun to talk about it with you. Last Thursday, President Barack Obama was back in Ohio, this time in Cincinnati, to discuss his job creation plan. President Obama says he would put Americans to work on infrastructure projects like replacing the functionally obsolete Brent Spence Bridge and the recently shut down Sherman Minton Bridge between Indiana and Kentucky.
It would lead to jobs for concrete workers like the ones here at Hilltop, jobs for construction workers and masons, carpenters, plumbers, electricians, architects, engineers, iron workers.
Critics say that the Cincinnati Bridge projects are not shovel ready and won't be helped immediately by the jobs bill. Are you concerned about America's infrastructure? And do you think the president's jobs bill is the way to go about fixing it? No pun intended. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have a new screener today, so we're breaking another one in, folks, so be nice. You can also email us, allsides@wosu.org. And Angie. Hi, Angie. You're on the air. Welcome to the show. You want to talk about those demonstrations on Wall Street?
Yes, I was just wondering if the people who were coming to see the Reverend Al, or is that who is speaking at the university today?
I don't know. Oh, you mean Jesse
Jackson.
Jesse, yeah.
The people who are going to watch him and he's going to give everybody some ideas, I wish that he would suggest that they, all of the jobless, would take themselves to Washington, D.C. or in,
well, Wall Street. I mean,
or
that's
Wall Street. Yeah. And since they have no jobs anyway and nothing else to do, they should go join their compadres and take a stand for the little person against the Wall Street bankers.
Have you been watching the demonstrations?
I've been trying to. It's very hard to come across any coverage unless you go to an outside of the country news source.
Yeah.
I can only find any updates on information through Al Jazeera English and the BBC and the Guardian UK, and that's just about it. I cannot find one word about it on any news source in the country.
Right. I haven't checked, you know, for news sources, but I know the best way that I've had to been able to get hold of stuff is on YouTube.
Yes.
There's a lot of stuff on that. Well, what do you think about that? Do you think it's important? They said that there were 1,000 people. That's not really that many people.
I know. I'm very saddened by it that our country is so complacent that they're all just going to lay down and take this. The bankers got away with everything that they did in 2008. They just walked away scot-free. But they're jailing protesters. They arrested 80 protesters on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't arrest any bankers for the kind of crooked things that they were doing. So I think it's very sad that people without any jobs and nothing else to do cannot find their way down there to go and make a stand.
Okay.
And I know they won't let them within 3 blocks of the Wall Street Exchange.
They weren't allowed within 3 blocks, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, exactly. They weren't even close to it.
I know.
Well, in my opinion, three blocks is a long ways in New York City. So, well, all right, Angie, thanks a lot. I share your frustration that you can't find it much about it in the news at all.
Yeah.
So,
all
right.
Thank you for bringing it to people's attention.
Well, thanks for calling, Angie.
Thanks.
Take care. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Ben in Dublin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good.
I'm someone who used to vote Republican because I had grown dissatisfied with the Democrats for various reasons. But I have not voted for the Republicans recently, and I'm very bothered by what I see going on with the Republicans, and it seems to me a misunderstanding of simple economics, and that is our problem now is not that there's a lack of people with money to invest, but the investment opportunities aren't there because consumers don't have the money to spend on goods and services. And so all of this focus on keeping tax cuts for the wealthy so that they'll have money to invest for creating jobs is nonsense. More money needs to go into the hands of the average spender. The rich are not stupid. They know that it makes no sense to invest in a business for which there are no customers. And so if there's demand out there, you can be sure that the smart American entrepreneur will create businesses and jobs to meet that demand.
Isn't this a good time to get in on some businesses, though, Ben?
What?
As an investor?
It depends. I mean, there are some cases where, yes, it makes sense. But overall, it's a problem. You can see why so many are holding back. Again, it's not that there isn't money out there for investment, but it's that the opportunities either aren't there overall or they seem iffy because of the lack of customers. And so if we can get that going by putting money back into the hands of the consumer, and that's gotten to be more difficult now, because consumers are so afraid of what's going to happen in the future. I mean, they've seen the hit they've taken with housing, with credit, which oftentimes had gone too far, but they still see that, and so people are reluctant to spend even when the money comes into their hands. So it's going to take a lot more, I think, than we've done in the past. But the idea of simply creating more or putting more wealth in the hands of those who are already wealthy doesn't make sense. And that's why we also see, too, that one of the drumbeats of the Republicans now nationally and in Ohio is to destroy jobs by cutting down the size of the government. I mean, it may be in the long run that's a worthy goal, the same with managing debt. But doing it at a time like this doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, they're saying that during the Strickland administration, something between 12,000 and 15,000 jobs went south. I mean, they went away.
Mm-hmm. Because of the economic problems.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's why.
So I was going to say it's not just Republicans.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, certainly not.
Yeah.
No, I think it's the problem of the economy. I mean, here's the dirty secret is really that it's not the Republicans or the Democrats who create jobs or destroy them overall. And they play a role in that. But there are factors that are bigger than that. And that's why we see that these politicians say, and they all do it, when I come in, I will create jobs this way.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't. You know, Mr. Boehner promised jobs, knowing full well that Obama would remain as president. But where are the jobs that the Republicans have produced so far? In Ohio, what jobs has Kasich produced? He hasn't, and because it's easier said than done. But I think that President Obama is closer to being on the right track with the overall idea of we need to get money out into the hands of the average person.
The people who buy washers and dryers and things
exactly.
like that.
Exactly, yes. Okay. And because they will then, I mean, then all the rest comes back to them. I mean, Henry Ford a long time ago shocked his fellow captains of industry by raising the wages of his workers.
Hmm.
But he knew this. With more money, they could buy Fords.
Right.
And they could buy the goods of other factories whose workers would in turn buy Fords. And that's what we need, not to fatten the bank accounts of those who sit around waiting for really non-existent investment opportunities.
Okay. Ben, thank you for your call. Appreciate that. Anybody agree, disagree with Ben, give us a call. Coming up after the break, Eric and Ed, Eric in Columbus. There's two Erics in Columbus, Charles and Parth and Mitchell and Hilliard. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's an open forum on 89.7 NPR News.
The U.S. uses unmanned aircraft to track down terrorists in remote places like Yemen, Somalia, and Pakistan. And many of these drones carry missiles. Now Pakistan, Turkey, and others want drones of their own, which presents opportunities for U.S. foreign policy and risks as well. I'm Neil Conan, Drone Wars, plus the opinion page. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. 67 degrees with cloudy skies in downtown Columbus. Expect showers and thunderstorms off and on throughout the day, some heavy rain at times, and a high of 71 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 52. Some sunshine tomorrow, a high of 70.
Support for 89.7 comes from COSI, presenting NPR's Neil Conan as he hosts The Evolution of Religion, a panel discussion about the intersection of science and religion at COSI on October 5th at 7 p.m. More at COSI.org.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back. It's an open forum today. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to the Facebook page. You can tweet at Ann Fisher, WOSU, as well. An email from Todd. He writes, paying for disaster relief is important, but use money from the failed drug war instead of taking money from electric car research, which will actually do some good. Now, we had another caller that wanted to talk about the same thing. He hung up. But what do you think? Where should we get the money from to pay for disaster relief? Or should we quit depending on the federal government for disaster relief? What would that be like? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Ed in German Village, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Ed. Hi, Ed.
I kind of want to dovetail on your second caller's comments. Okay. About the intransigence of the Republicans and the making of the Capitol right now. Capital wealth is what I mean. Mm-hmm. You know, for the most part, wealth creation is made anymore, it seems like, by taking money and shifting things around and making more money and then saying, well, see, I've got money, so you can get it too. But they're not really creating any jobs. They're just creating capital, which they then keep and reinvest in other capital, and that money never really goes downhill except in a trickle. And we all know what that's been doing for us. But, you know, the Republicans pretty much said that they were going to do everything they could to make sure that Obama had a failed presidency. And, you know, one of them said, well, cooperate or compromise but not cooperate, or back, you know, maybe I have it reversed, but either way, you cannot do one without the other. And that's the problem, and I think Obama needs to start hammering that message home, that they say they want to cooperate, but they won't compromise, and that they say they want to have a failed presidency, both of which mean they're not really looking out for the good of the country. They're just looking out for the good of themselves, trying to get themselves reelected.
Well, polling has showed that
if you look at their policies, they are really eliminating jobs. You know?
Well, the polling's shown that that's not a very smart thing to do, that the voters don't like when you don't get along and play nice. They want some answers and they want some solutions. So if you think the Republicans are doing that, why do you think they're continuing to do that?
They're continuing to do that because they think that they have enough people from the independents that are saying, well, Obama hasn't really done the job. We'll give the Republicans back another chance. And so that's what they're trying to count on, is that enough people will just say, well, he's tried things and it hasn't worked. Let's give the other group a chance. And they're counting on people not really paying attention to the fact that, well, he didn't really have a chance because he didn't get anybody to work with him. From the other side. Every time somebody stands up to cooperate, they get shot down.
What do you think the Democrats can do to counteract the effect of that tactic?
As I said, I think the best thing they can do is to hammer home the point that they you know, even though they say, well, where's the jobs, just say, well, we've given them opportunities to help us create jobs, and they just keep saying, we can't do it this way, we can't do it that way, we can only do it one way. For instance, the tax and spending controversy. There should be no controversy, because when you look at the historic high tax rates, we've always had good job creation in those times. In order to not give that money to the government, what do? You go out there and you try to find a way to use that capital so that you can create jobs, and then the business write-offs and things you get will help you lower your effective tax rate. But if you're just going to sit there and hoard the money, then yes, the tax rate should go up and tax that income. I mean, when you got a hedge fund manager not paying, you know, paying 15% on just created wealth that's not doing anything, but somebody down the hall that's doing all the work for him has to pay 25%, then that is inequitable. And the Republicans can call class warfare all they want. It is, and they are the ones that are promoting it by just letting the millionaires keep their money and just saying every time somebody says, well, we need to make it fair, they say class warfare. They're the ones that have kept it up, and they're the ones that we need to actually get out of office so we can get some of these problems solved.
Okay. Ed, thanks for that call. What do you think out there? You agree with Ed? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And hi, Charles, you're in Galena, and you want to talk about fracking. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I guess I would start by saying I agree with Ed.
Okay.
But I really wanted to talk about the issue of fracking, because it comes up constantly in an environmental context, and I'm a committed environmentalist. But part of the debate that I think is challenging is that we don't ask about what the alternatives to fracking are. I mean, fracking is enabling us to have very low-priced natural gas, which is getting to the point where we can actually consider using gas to make electricity instead of coal. So when we think of fracking and the moratoriums or, you know, sort of a knee-jerk reaction to shutting fracking down, we have to say that we're actually voting in favor of things like mountaintop removal coal mining. And, you know, if natural gas stays at the prices it's at now, we could potentially use natural gas as a transportation fuel instead of, you know, 60% of our oil coming from overseas.
Well, Charles, the environmental concerns aside, some folks are concerned that if we keep going after non-renewable resources, we won't be able to get ahead in the renewable resource industry.
That's probably true.
I mean, eventually the gas will run out.
But that's sort of that's the false dichotomy, because we're not really facing a choice between renewable and non-renewable. Mm-hmm. We're facing a choice between where do we get our base load generation? Do we get it from coal, or do we get it from nukes, or do we get it from natural gas? Where do we get our transportation fuels? I mean, are we going to get it from oil from Saudi Arabia? When was the last time anyone really looked at the environmental record of oil production in Saudi Arabia or Venezuela or Nigeria? You know, so we can't fall to the false dichotomy and ask ourselves, oh, do we want, you know, to frack and get natural gas at $4 per million BTUs, or should we be investing in electric cars? Well, electric cars, where does that electricity come from?
Mm-hmm.
Or solar power? How do we make solar panels? How do we refine silicon? What kind of heavy metals are we putting in that silicon? I mean, there are a range of complicated environmental debates, but I think the thing we have to consider when we are sourcing fossil fuels is which ones do we want? And for my money as an environmentalist, I'd say natural gas, even with, you know, horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing, it's 30-year-old technology. Those formations are 10,000 feet down. Our drinking water is 300 to 500 feet down. We know technically how to prevent problems, so absolutely in favor of disclosure as to what chemicals are going in, very good transparency around safety records, but let's just not throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Okay. Thank you, Charles, for that call. Take
My
care.
Have a nice day.
You too. 614-292-8513. If you want to join the conversation, we have an open forum going right now. What do you want to talk about? We've been talking about the virtues of, you know, how we fund our FEMA disaster relief efforts. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, if you want to talk about that and anything else. And Eric in Columbus, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Enjoy your program.
Thank you, Eric.
You know, I'm going to hit a couple buttons. I not only get to teach a couple courses in economics at a university here in town, but I'm also a hedge fund manager. And I spent the weekend in Houston, Texas, and I was surprised at a social function we went to at the number of landmen who are on their way either Sunday night or this morning already to Utica.
Mm-hmm.
to get the oil and gas leases lined up and start fracking.
That's what they call the people who actually get the leases. They come from Oklahoma. They come from Texas.
Yep.
They come from all over the place. Yeah. Wherever there's oil.
Yeah. And your previous callers hit on a couple good points. You know, the one gentleman that spoke about taxing, you know, millionaires and so on. There's some, you know, real good benefits from having millionaires around. I mean, you know, go drive by the McConnell Heart Hospital or the Wexner Center. You know, the more you tax something, the less you will get of it. So before we all start piling on taxing people who make an excess of $250,000 or more, you know, is that necessarily, you know, do we want to have less of those people later on? And to Charles' point, I thought Charles made a very good point. You know, love him or hate him, George W. Bush did a great thing when gasoline prices went up to $4.80 a gallon. I remember paying $5 a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
He let the market clear. And, you know, all of a sudden we had a lot of interest in electric cars, alternative fuels.
You meaning he didn't monkey with the market?
Correct.
Okay.
He let it go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, COTUS saw their ridership, I think, 1 month. I remember hearing it jump 25%.
Right.
Bicycle shops were all of a sudden real busy. You know, and then prices came back down again. And all of a sudden, Toyota shut down a Prius plant they were going to build in California. You know, that's the dark side or the bad part of capitalism. You know, the market does change things. So, you know, you've got to deal with that. Now, do we want to make it a government policy to have more alternatively fueled vehicles? You know, great. You know, slap a tax on, gasoline and, you know, use it to funnel that. But, you know, the market's doing what the market does.
But if you slap a tax on gasoline, that hurts some people more than others. As you know,
so a regressive tax.
But the guy driving in who has to drive in from, some far-flung rural county to get a job in Columbus, mm-hmm. some of those people are paying, you know, at that point when the gas was at $4 to $5 a gallon, they literally couldn't afford to go to work.
That's true, but that gives them incentives, perhaps, to see if they can't locate their family, you know, closer, you know, in the inner city.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what happened? Where did suburbia come from? Well, suburbia probably came from, you know, cheap energy.
Right.
All of a sudden we can afford to drive to some far-flung place and live there as opposed to living within, you know, the inner city. So, you know, there's negative and positive externalities to all of this, but it's just part of, you know, it's part of capitalism.
Okay. Eric, thanks for your call.
Yeah, not a problem. Enjoy your program.
Thank you, Eric. Bye-bye. Take care. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Joe, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Yes, I want to talk about electric transportation. Mayor Coleman wanted to have some electric streetcars going up and down High Street, and that was nixed. And then the governor decided, well, we won't have any trains coming through Ohio. And now you have the latest thing, the transportation thing, where they want to send it to FEMA.
But, well, that's not the governor, but yeah.
Well, the governor, no. Right. No, that's not. That's a
federal.
That's mm-hmm. the latest thing that's going on.
In Congress, right.
Yeah. Now, the other thing I want to talk about, okay, it's people with jobs that spend money and keep the economy going. But where did our jobs go? We had Timken's, we had Jeffries, we had Ranco, we had Columbus Coated Factory, packing companies, we had General Motors, we had Bell Labs.
Well, you know where they went.
Yeah, but why? That's where all the money is going, and that's where they went. Yeah, I know where they went, but can we get those type of jobs back? What kind of jobs do we have for the people that live in the inner city or, you know, the people that are not working now that have lost their jobs due to these companies going somewhere else?
They say that there are industries out there and businesses out there that can't find enough people. There's a shortage of people to do the jobs because they're not properly educated to do them.
True, but we're never going to have enough of those. But the majority of jobs are people that are limited education. Well, maybe we could add 2 years to our high schools and give more education. Mm.
That's interesting.
Uh-huh.
That's interesting.
Okay, anyway.
All right. Joe, thanks for the call.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks. Bye. Let's see. Brian, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Hey, Ann. I wanted to follow up with a comment you made about, one of your guests made in an email about FEMA funding. I help out with a couple of groups that do disaster relief mm-hmm. here in Ohio. And it seems to me that most people have become dependent on the federal government. When we do booths at public, you know, events to try to spread information on how to be prepared, it's like, you know, we're at a funeral. Nobody comes to our booth. Nobody wants to pick up our pamphlets, how to prepare, because I think most people have fallen into that false sense of security. And you saw a big backlash from folks at Hurricane Katrina, at FEMA, because they weren't there fast enough. They weren't giving out enough stuff. It was, so I think maybe less money for FEMA would force more people to become somewhat more self-reliant, because when you look at disasters, they tend to happen in the same places over and over again. But the federal government just steps on in and saves the day, and I think we've become so dependent on them that that's why you see, you know, more and more people wanting more funding for FEMA.
Well, the East Coast disasters weren't exactly typical.
Correct. There are going to be your flukes, but you look at your typical things like fall and spring flooding in the Northwest. You look at your hurricanes in the South and the Gulf Coast, your tornadoes in the Midwest. They're fairly typical. They're fairly expected. And now there's always going to be the big one that people always talk about, like Katrina. But hurricanes, for the most part, are not a new thing to the Gulf. And yet there doesn't seem to be – there's a lot of complacency. I'll just call it that with Americans and disaster relief. And it really needs to start at the local level and work its way up. But most people, like I said, are complacent with FEMA. So it's a good thing, and we need to have it. But Americans need to become more self-reliant at the lower level.
What about cutting the loan guarantee program for developing electric cars?
I don't know too much about that program, mm-hmm. so I'm not comfortable having an opinion on that because I really don't know that much about it. I think a government has played a big role in the past when you look at things like the internet, space and engineering. Military technology has influenced a lot of things that we do in our lives, like cell phones, like computers. So this idea that government doesn't create jobs is kind of not completely true, but it's important that private sector also step up to the plate. I will say that I have an associate who got into the solar panel industry, and he thought he was going to make some money selling solar panels, and the cost solar panels is just too great, and he ended up having to get out of it because
right.
there were no buyers for it because the cost has not come down enough. So,
Price of gasoline hasn't gone up high enough.
Exactly.
I mean, the cost of petroleum, yeah.
Exactly. So I think it's important the government gets involved in new technologies because we've seen benefits. I think we forget, you know, where the internet came from. We take that for granted because now it's so ubiquitous. Our cell phones, communications. We forget that at some point the government got the ball rolling. So I think it is important that government does get involved. And I think what your email person said earlier about maybe taking some money from the, you know, from the DEA
mm-hmm.
May not necessarily be a bad thing. But that's another debate altogether, the whole
yes.
drug war thing.
It sure is.
Well, thank you for your time, man.
Hey, thanks for calling, Brian. Take care. Bye-bye. We have an email from Carrie. Carrie in the campus area. Carrie writes, although it's very important to get relief money to the East Coast, cutting the electric car program is a bad idea. It's a great way to delay this country from moving forward past its dependence on oil. Now, clearly, we're nowhere near the point of moving past oil use today, but programs like this could become a huge step forward if given the time to develop properly. The electric car is not a perfect solution to our transportation needs right now, but this is all about moving in the right direction. Don't they have any other options for programs to cut? Good question, Carrie. I just finished reading a book. It's called The Wind-Up Girl. It takes place, it's sort of a futuristic kind of sci-fi novel. It takes place in the post-petroleum period. And it isn't pretty, people, but it's just a book so far. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, how one State Department employee spent time rebuilding Iraq.
We had money everywhere. It was literally in boxes that you had to step over. At one point in time, I had $100,000 in cash in a small safe in my office. I felt like a drug dealer.
Peter Van Buren's new book is We Meant Well, How I Helped Lose the Battle for the Hearts and Minds of the Iraqi People. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us today. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of All Sides begins, adult children helping their parents with their finances. We'll have an expert on the topic. A Wall Street Journal financial columnist will be joining the show at 11 o'clock. Join us for hour two of All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Support for 89.7 comes from The Women's Book, a directory of local resources for women. Its 2011 book titled Confidence, Getting It, Keeping It, and Passing It On will be available at the Columbus Area Release Party September 29th. Details at thewomensbook.com.
It's 67 degrees with cloudy skies. Expect showers and thunderstorms off and on throughout the day, a high of 71 degrees today. Partly cloudy tonight, rain tapering off, a low of 52. A little bit of sunshine expected for Tuesday, a high of 70 degrees. And a chance of rain Tuesday night, a low of 52. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We have an open forum today. Let's listen to a little bit more news first. For those people that, well, are listening to Social Security, for those people that are approaching Social Security, wait a minute. At Thursday night's GOP presidential debate, there were nine contenders. Let's listen to Rick Perry and Mitt Romney attack each other's positions on Social Security. First, Rick Perry.
For those people that are approaching Social Security, they don't have anything in the world to worry about. We have made a solemn oath to the people of this country that that Social Security program in place today will be there for them. Now, it's not the first time that Mitt's been wrong on some issues before.
And let's listen to Mitt Romney's response.
There's a Rick Perry out there that's saying that almost to quote, it says that the federal government shouldn't be in the pension business, that it's unconstitutional, and it should be returned to the states. So you better find that Rick Perry and get him to stop saying that.
Former talk show host and long shot candidate Herman Cain responded to Perry and Romney by saying, "I don't think we're doing a service to the American people to keep bantering about what you call it and what you don't call it. The solution is fix it." Herman Cain won a surprise victory in Saturday night's straw poll of party activists in Florida. Many of the 2,600 delegates there said their vote for Cain was a way to register their frustration with all the GOP candidates, particularly Perry, who they felt gave a dismal performance at Thursday's debate. What do you think? Who's impressed you the most? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Jim in Columbus, you're on the air. Hang on one second. Jim in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, this is Jim.
Hi, Jim.
I wanted to make a historical observation. It's about the pendulum shifting back and forth. And I'm angered at how quickly the pendulum has shifted to the right. And what I mean by this is, after Hoover, you had Roosevelt as the president, and, you know, we had the Depression, the major financial collapse, and there was a shift towards the Democratic Party, or I should say a shift towards those who kind of represent the average person, the middle class. And this went on, you know, and obviously we had World War II, and many other things that brought us out of depression. And there was a long period of Democratic or you would call it liberal politics that ruled the day. And what I see is, here we have, after a Bush debacle in which of 8 years we had an illegal war, the more information we find out that the Iraq war, there was no justification, there was no weapons of mass destruction, and the Bush administration knew it. He brought us to a financial collapse, almost depression. And I feel we should be congratulating Obama and his administration from staving off a depression. He was able to settle the banks. He was able to get health care reform, and the list goes on, bank reform, on and on. But what I see is that the wealthy elite class who control the press has been able to create an effective campaign and getting that pendulum to shift back to the right so quickly. And I feel the American populace are being boondoggled.
Well, do you think the American populace depends on too few news sources then? Because there's a lot of information out there. There's more information out there than there ever has been, Jim. There's more easier access to more information. What do you think it is? Because there's no shortage of information and websites and that sort of thing saying the same thing you are.
I agree with you. There is a girth of information. But the fact of the matter is, the main press resources that the average American has, whether it be the newspapers like the Dispatch, which is obviously a Republican pamphlet, or the newspapers, which are, or I should say, the major news broadcast, which most American people listen to, because they don't have enough time in the day. Here they're raising their families. They're working hard. Now both mother and father are first forced to work, on and on and on. People don't have the time to really get the true information or accurate information that they would have to look for outside of the mainstream media. And I think, you know, all one has to do is read Noam Chomsky and Manufacturing Consent, on, and to see how effectively the wealthy elite, and again, we're talking about the 1% who are able to so effectively, whether through, and I really believe this, I mean, I listen just to hear the other side, whether it be the Rush Limbaugh, I think mm-hmm. the Fed feeding or talking point, because you see all these different right-wing media having talking point, all on the same verbiage, spouting out their different propaganda to basically effectively get the average person to think, oh, this is class warfare, or, you know, we have to get Obama out of office and bring in the new Republican right who's going to represent your interests. And that, if we see what Kasich is doing here in Columbus, or when a Republican mayor is trying to get rid of unions, et cetera, again, as you can see, I go on and on.
Okay.
I believe we're being hoodwinked.
Okay.
And the people, I can't believe the pendulum has shifted so far to the right so
All right.
quickly.
All right. Well, Jim, thanks for your call. Thanks for waiting. Take care. 614-292-8513. Mark, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you. I'm just disappointed with WSU's decision to throw its AM radio listeners basically under the bus.
Well, it was part of the deal with buying the new station, the new FM station for 101.
Yeah, I think the whole thing was a big mistake because I don't think 101 reaches as far as the old station did. And I don't think the FM station is going to carry as far as 820 does. So I think it's kind of a lose-lose for everybody. I think it's just a degradation of service.
Classical 101. Do you only listen on AM? Can you not get the FM?
I have a lot of AM radios, and I like to listen to them. And when I'm traveling, it's easy to get 820 on the radio, where FM just fades out too quickly, so I lose the signal.
You know, of course, that AM doesn't have the listenership.
Well, it does and it doesn't, but I just think you're going to have fewer listeners because, like I said, your signal's not going to carry as far.
You also can listen online.
I know.
You can watch it on television, for that matter.
I know, but it's I hate
there's more options than ever, Mark.
Not for the AM radio, though. So
no.
That's what I like, and I'm really going to miss it. I'm really sad about it, really.
One thing, Mark, is 89.7 is much easier to hear at night. So, you know, you might want to try different options, but we appreciate your concern. It's always hard. Change, you know, change is never easy, and we had
change.
To do it though financially. We you know, it was part of the deal, and it had to go. So,
yeah,
but it's not that we don't appreciate it.
Change for the better and change for the worse too. But I'm really sad to see AM go. It's been around for 90 years.
I know.
And there are those of us out there who listen to our AM radios who are really very unhappy about the change.
Well. We hope you'll try to stick with us and appreciate your call today.
Okay.
All right.
And I appreciate
care.
Your effort.
You bet. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Bye. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Parth in the car. Welcome to the show, Parth. I love your name. Parth.
Hey, and thank you so much for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
Just a couple of things real quick. The most previous, Jim, I believe his name was. I agree. He hit the nail. I mean, you know, right on what I wanted to say. But overall about the Republican debate, I'd like to say is I watched the first debate and I was not impressed by any candidates. I'm originally from India, so I'm not really like a Republican or a Democrat. I look at the candidates, and that's the way I vote traditionally. So I've looked at the debates. I looked at all the candidates, and I don't think there's any candidate that is strong enough or that has any ideas other than just fighting with each other to move this country forward. I think Obama has done a phenomenal job so far, and I think that if he's elected next term, I think he's going to do even better. I mean, he's trying to do a lot of things, but it seems like for an average, I'm just a recent graduate from college, average person, I have a full-time job, and the amount of TV that I watch, it seems like Obama is trying to compromise with Republican Party day in and day out, but all he gets is no, no, and no. And I think it'll be the huge mistake for this country and for its people if we decide to elect a Republican candidate, unless there's a candidate out there that, you know, joins the race out of nowhere and has some ideas.
What
to
about
move this country forward.
Sarah Palin?
Sarah Palin, just from what I remember back in 08, she didn't really struck out as a leader that has any sort of ideas that can move this country forward. I mean, I really didn't feel. I mean, she created a lot of a lot of craze for Republican Party, and she was definitely a star, but I don't see her as being a president, not because she's a female, but mm-hmm. she just doesn't have things to offer for this country. I mean, as an educated, as a working person, I want someone who has some ideas that will move this country forward.
Okay.
I don't care about any inner politics or any, past. You know, it's not where, because my father was a Republican, I have to be a Republican. I'm not that sort of a person. I want to see a person that's going to do good for this country. And I moved from India to the United States for that, and I hope Obama will come again in the next term. And if it doesn't, I mean, I think it'll be a big mistake. But there is not a Republican candidate out there that can beat Obama as of right now. So,
Parth, thanks for calling.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate
it.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Ooh, Dale. Dale, I'm coming to the rescue. Dale, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Dale?
Basically, a comment about the economy in general.
Well?
We need tax revenues. And to put it simply, tax revenues come from an employed population. As far as the Republican thing they got going over there, I'm sure they're going to work it out, but I doubt it's going to help them in the 2012 election. It's just way too radical. And I think that if the things in this country continue, the conditions in this country continue, that magical 20-something generation that sparked light all around the planet is going to take a stand, and a very substantial stand. And we could see a spring, an Arab Spring, so to speak, in a very, very different form in this country in the near future, based on whether the gridlock stops. Now, let's quote Obama. It's not whether government is too big or whether it's too small. It's whether it works. And I think a straw poll would agree that right now it's not working. And there are factions who have planted their feet and refuse to do really anything. And this is a time in our country, in our history, where something has to be done.
Okay.
This gridlock cannot be good for this country.
Okay.
And the people who have got their feet dug in are on the wrong side of history.
Thanks, Dale, for that call. You know, it reminds me of some people say around the world, people are watching the United States and wish they had our problems. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Will in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Will.
Hi, Ann. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Good. I know you're running up against the end of the hour, so I'll be quick. Back to your original comments about infrastructure. I'm an engineer and currently unemployed, so I think the idea of investing in infrastructure is a great idea. And traditionally, it's also been a way to bring money into the economy and help stimulate job growth. However, I do have to take you to task when you said in your intro that opponents of President Obama said that the bill wouldn't create any jobs. That's true, but not only that, the people in charge of the Brent Spence Bridge project said it won't create any jobs they won't break ground for till 2015. And when they asked President Obama's aides who were organizing the trip, they said, "Oh well, no, we didn't say this was going to be a job. It just this is an example, and we used it for political purpose." And I think that's the problem with the way the president's going about trying to push this is he's trying to make people mad as opposed to actually showing real examples for real things that are going to make a real impact.
During the last stimulus package, or they don't want to call this a stimulus package, whatever, they did very much focus on shovel-ready projects.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that made a difference?
Well, it's the right idea because, again, it's something when you break ground and you start building, that's where the large chunk of job generation is going to be. That's the right thing, but again.
Yeah. Are you there? Oh, I'm sorry. Bill, are you there? Oh, we lost. We lost Bill. I'm sorry, Bill. I don't know why you were cut off, but we're running out of time. So thanks, everybody, for your calls. I enjoyed the conversation today. We'll have an email from Mark in Columbus, though, and leave you with this. He says, "I have to disagree with the earlier caller who claimed that the WOSU-FM signal doesn't reach as far as the AM signal. I drive up to Delaware, the city, not the state, a lot, listening to WOSU all the way. The AM state or on the way. The AM station used to fade out halfway up Route 23. Now I listen to the FM station, and what a change. It is still rock solid in downtown Delaware. Maybe something is wrong with the other caller's radio." I don't know. But, Mark, thanks for listening, and thanks for that email. And to everybody else, thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.